You're listening to Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Authorities say two people were injured when a major natural gas pipeline exploded in flames overnight in a town 90 miles south of Louisville. Officials said it's a tough day to lose the giant 30-inch pipeline that carries natural gas from the Gulf of Mexico to the Northeast and Midwest.
While D.C. is not facing an alien attack, there is reason to fear explosion in the nation's capital. Why? Well, researchers have found about 6,000 natural gas leaks under the roads in the District of Columbia. At least 12 of them are potentially explosive. Duke and Boston University researchers drove down every street of D.C. to measure the leaks. Most are said to not pose any risk to the general public. However, they could add to climate change.
Scientists cruising around in Boston and Washington, D.C. discovered large amounts of natural gas, basically methane, leaking out of city pipelines. Safety's obviously a concern, but so is the claim that natural gas is a better fossil fuel option than coal. We're joined by one of the principals in these studies, Dr. Nathan Phillips, and a professor at Boston University. Dr. Phillips, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex.
That Boston study came first. Why did you do it?
Well, it's a case of serendipity in science. I really was not studying this topic until by accident I met someone who was looking at gas leaks a couple blocks away from my home outside of Boston. And that's where I learned about the problem. I learned that it damages trees, and I study trees. That's my specialty. And from there, the other aspects of these leaking gas pipelines became apparent very quickly, including the global greenhouse gas impact.
I didn't know it damaged trees. What happens to them?
The gas displaces oxygen in the root zone, and the roots need oxygen to, like we need to breathe, the roots need, you know, oxygen, and without it, they asphyxiate. So that damages the trees and other vegetation.
So how does a person or a team of scientists go about measuring natural gas leaking in a major American city?
It used to be difficult. In the last 5 or 10 years, it's become much simpler. The instrumentation that allows us to measure high-precision methane has improved to the point that it can be mobile. So if you think about what Google, for example, has done with their Street View vehicles, you can think about the environmental measurements basically being on pace with that. So methane and going forward, temperature, ozone, other types of measurements will now be linked with GPS and be available from drive-arounds.
Should we presume that natural gas leaks are worse in the older East Coast cities where the pipes were laid maybe even in the late 1800s than, say, in a newer suburb in the West?
All things equal, I would say yes. However, it really depends on the specific conditions, particularly environmental conditions. If there's a lot of freeze-thaw cycles, those things can have an impact even if the age of the pipe is not as old. And so all things are not equal between cities. So I hesitate to make a categorical claim that it's worse in the East Coast cities.
So how serious were some of the leaks that you discovered?
Well, both in Boston and Washington, D.C., in terms of seriousness, there's a couple dimensions to that. As you noted in the introduction, there's human health and safety, so explosion risks, and that's right at the point of the leak. And then there's the greenhouse gas issue, which is, you know, a global issue. There's also an intermediate scale, kind of the regional scale, which relates to air pollution, ozone, and other pollutants that are stimulated or promoted by natural gas leaks. And so these things are all playing out in these different cities. We've seen all of those impacts.
And I gather some were big enough that they could have become an explosion. Did you report those dangerous leaks to the authorities, and what happened?
Yes, those are what are called in the U.S. grade 1 leaks. So they are potentially explosive leaks. And when we did come across those, we reported them, and the utilities are required to respond in very short order to those, and they have, and they address those to their credit. I should say that in the studies that we, the Washington, D.C. and Boston studies, we didn't set out to do a comprehensive examination of explosive situations. So the few or handful of situations that we did report in both of those papers were really more of an ad hoc ancillary collection where we happened to note that there were explosive conditions. So what I'm getting at is that there's probably many more existing conditions that are explosive in those cities and other cities as we speak.
Now, we can't see or smell methane, as far as I know, so do natural gas companies add a warning smell to their product as they do with propane?
Yes, and this is a class of sulfur compounds called mercaptans that are added into the gas. It's kind of a, some people liken it to a rotten egg smell, but it's definitely a distinct odor that is put into the gas.
And how many pipeline leaks did you find? Was it like a dozen or 100 or more?
Well, it's on the order of thousands in Boston as well as in Washington, D.C. So in Boston, we had close to 4,000, and in Washington, D.C., we had close to 6,000. Those kind of were proportional roughly to the total length of pipelines in those two cities. So they're about the same density or number of leaks per mile in the two cities. If anything, the Washington, D.C. leak values, at the surface level at least, the concentration of gas were higher, so they seemed to be more intense.
Now, the first I heard about these leaky city gas systems, I think it was about Baltimore, from Robert Howarth of Cornell. He estimated methane losses in the whole system from fracking wells through storage units, which also leak, to city delivery. And Howarth got a lot of heat for that. Others at his university even tried to discredit his work. Have you had any pushback?
Well, no, we haven't had any pushback because I think the findings that we've had are really not something that can be disputed. They're either we did see those leaks or we didn't, and the data either is showing these spikes on the roads or they're not. And so we're confident in the measurements that we made. And Professor Howarth, his work was valuable in being the first paper to really put the question out there, but because it was so early, he had to rely on very limited direct data measurements and use estimates that had been made. And from those, he concluded that we may have a serious issue with this. In our work, we went out and actually measured the number of leaks. And so that really, you know, just constrains the problem a whole lot more on our end. So, no, we haven't really gotten the kind of pushback that you were discussing.
Well, you know, the gas companies must know how much they're losing. They could just calculate the amount coming into a major metropolitan market versus the actual amounts they bill for. Did you manage to get any of those figures? Does anybody have those figures, or does it matter for this study?
Yes, we do have those figures, and those are publicly available through the Department of Transportation, and that's called the Lost and Unaccounted For Gas. The problem is that it's a black box that is composed of three different categories. One is accounting errors, two is metering errors, and three is our leaks from the pipeline system. The problem is that it's some combination of those three things, and we don't know how to partition that overall lost and unaccounted for gas into those three components. So our work on the leak side is something which we hope to clarify that aspect of it and know what percentage of the total lost and unaccounted for gas there is. But in a state like Massachusetts, the amount of reported lost and unaccounted for gas can be up to 8% of the entire state's greenhouse gas inventory. So the stakes are very high to resolve this question.
Right. And how does these natural gas leaks fit into the overall methane releases in the United States?
Well, we don't know. That's what we've done so far is to document that there are a great number of leaks in urban areas and suburbs. We've also documented that some of those leaks, a selection of those leaks, can individually be significant in the amount of gas that's coming out of individual leaks. sometimes multiples of times of the daily household average gas consumption. But we don't have the number as to what all of those leaks in a metropolitan area add up to and how that compares with the overall lost estimates from the entire process chain. As I said, the amount of lost and unaccounted for gas just from the distribution systems, so that's the city and suburb neighborhood pipeline systems, can add up to a large component of the entire state's greenhouse gas inventory. So it is potentially significant.
Now, you mentioned Massachusetts, and I know Representative Markey has put forward a bill to try and get some pressure on the companies to fix it and maybe some public money to help them fix it. From a public policy perspective, what do you think politicians can do to address this problem?
Well, that's Senator Markey I think you're now referencing. And yes, the infrastructure that we have is aging, and I think that one of the things that needs to be a kind of a prerequisite to addressing this problem is for there to be a sense of shared ownership about this publicly regulated infrastructure, which, you know, is in some cases pipelines over 100 years old. It's easy to point the finger at the utility and say it's all of their problem and they have to fix the whole thing, you know, but this is really, you know, a kind of a commons. It's our infrastructure, and I think that, you know, there may be some combination of ratepayers and the utilities and the investors that have to come up with a joint solution, because it is really a shared issue.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest, Dr. Nathan Phillips of Boston University. We are talking about scientific studies showing an alarming number of natural gas pipeline leaks right in major American cities. And we have been talking about America here, but I remember when global atmosphere campaigners were working away on where the methane was coming from, they found a hell of a lot of it was coming from Russian pipelines that were leaking all the way from Siberia and going west. Have you heard anything about that?
Well, that was implicated, I think, as far back or even earlier than the mid-90s. And I don't have any direct knowledge of updates on that. I just would say that any old city with aging infrastructure, based on my experience, is, you know, something that should be checked for pipeline leaks.
Well, right, and we should be talking here about Britain, where gas started lighting the cities in the 1800s, and continental Europe. Have any European academics contacted you or started similar investigations?
Yes, and certainly there have been, and academics as well as news organizations. This issue pops up when there are explosions, and that's often the triggering factor for inquiries. And so several months ago in Prague, there was a building explosion that was related to natural gas. It happens, you know, not infrequently, and this is where the inquiries get made. One of the things that I always look for are manhole explosions. That's the number one underappreciated diagnostic, I believe, of underground pipeline leak problems or potential problems. And these are something that pop up in the news frequently from place to place and are an indicator that there's a problem underground.
Yeah, there's a whole YouTube genre of nothing but natural gas explosion videos. There's one just in Kentucky that blew out a major line, and there's even a video game where you can have your character try and dodge the blowing manhole covers. So I'm wondering, though, in the bigger picture, the studies that you and Rob Jackson and other scientists did, how do they fit into this debate about whether natural gas is a good bridge fuel, say, to replace coal?
Well, I think that they point to the need, you know, to address our infrastructure, our existing infrastructure. So much of the emphasis seems to be on building out new infrastructure. And, you know, I kind of liken that to having leaks in one's roof and yet being focused on making new additions to the house with a new roof somewhere or addition. And we really have to address our existing infrastructure, know what the leak rate is, and address it before we spend so much time thinking about putting out new infrastructure and new infrastructure that should have lifetimes of many, many decades. And so when we talk about natural gas as a bridge fuel, well, how many decades are we talking about for using this gas and investing in long-lived infrastructure versus using it truly as a currency to allow us to get to renewable fuels?
Well, you know, eastern cities like Boston have taken a winter pounding this year. Americans must be burning more natural gas this winter. Would that mean more is leaking out of these pipelines into the atmosphere?
Not necessarily. It's possible, but it's not necessarily the case. And that's because these distribution systems, pipeline systems, are pressure regulated. So essentially, the pressure is maintained at a certain level. And if demand goes up, more gas is put into the system, but it's maintained at the same pressure. Just like a tire on a bike is at a certain pressure, and if you have a hole in that tire, it's going to leak out at a certain rate. If you maintain that pressure, it's going to leak out at the same rate. Now, there could be a little bit of a nuance to that in that sometimes they overpressurize the system in the winter just to kind of get a little bit ahead of the demand, and there may be, in those cases, a somewhat enhanced leak rate.
Will you be doing studies of more gas leaks in more cities, or is this something that the cities and the utilities should be doing themselves now?
Well, I think that it's a combination of both. So some of the legislation in Massachusetts puts requirements on the utilities for more stringent gas leak surveys. I do believe that there should be a role for independent audits and leak surveys by, you know, a third party, and that's an important check, you know, and verification on the problem. So I do think that this is going to become much more common, and other independent groups will be doing gas leak surveys because the price and ease of doing this it's becoming more easy and it's becoming cheaper to do so. So that's going to continue to happen. It's becoming more transparent. I think the cat's out of the bag with regard to these surveys, and so it's only going to increase the pressure to address the problem.
Now, I'd like to ask your personal opinion about something. When we look at the dire consequences of a relatively rapid climate shift, are you personally worried about the future of university students, and is it your sense that young people are also concerned about it?
Yeah, I'm concerned. You know, I think that I say that, you know, in the climate reports from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, one of the most prevalent words is uncertainty. Some people take uncertainty as a reason not to act because we're not certain that there's going to be serious consequences of climate change. But for me, it's exactly the opposite. When I, you know, see that uncertainty, it makes me think that we really need to be precautionary about our future. And, you know, our students are going to be inheriting that future, and so they need to be equally concerned. And I get a lot of inspiration from my students because I find that they are taking this issue much more seriously than some of the people from my own generation who, you know, really ought to be taking it more seriously.
Is there anything that I've missed that you would like to tell our listeners?
Well, I think that addressing the problem of the leaking gas pipes, we have to think about our infrastructure as a kind of integrated ecosystem of infrastructure. Our water pipes, our gas pipes, our electrical pipes. A lot of this infrastructure is co-located on or under our streets or above our streets. And often the way our cities work, the way we manage our cities, is that we'll address one piece of it at the exclusion of the others. And sometimes you can actually exacerbate problems in one by addressing the problems of the other. So we really need to coordinate our infrastructure so that when we replace a leaking water pipe, we check to see if there's a 100-year-old gas pipe. If there is, let's replace that at the same time. And so I think there are cost savings, there are opportunities that we can look for and be more smart about our cities and maintaining our infrastructure.
Yeah, I think there's a tendency of citizens to pretend this underground world doesn't exist, as though trees don't have roots, and our cities certainly have a lot of roots going around in there. Our guest has been Dr. Nathan G. Phillips from Boston University. He's co-author of the papers Mapping Urban Pipeline Leaks, Methane Leaks Across Boston, and Natural Gas Pipeline Leaks Across Washington, D.C. That one was just published in the January 16th edition of the journal Environmental Science and Technology. Nathan, thank you so much for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.